Welcome to SROA Soundboard, a podcast for radiation oncology administrators. I'm Tammy McCausland. I'm joined today with Keisha Marie Clark. Keisha Marie is Department Coordinator of Learning Operations at Northside Hospital in Atlanta. Welcome, Keisha Marie.
Thank you.
So you gave a really outstanding presentation at SROA, where there were a lot of compliments by the way you approached the topic of diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I'm doing this follow-up podcast with you. My first question is, have you experienced a professional environment that does DEI well?
I would say, yeah. I think that most organizations are striving to do DEI well. I think it's important to focus on the outcome. Organizations really need to be thinking about how they make space to have tough conversations if or when non-inclusive behavior exists in the workspace. One of the things when we're thinking through doing DEI well and what I've experienced is thinking through the organization's policy regarding inclusive hiring practices. It's thinking about the way work is executed. DEI is a practice, you know, which I talked about in my lecture, and it's something that's never perfected and then tucked away, right? It becomes part of the organization's culture, much like kind of customer service, right? You never just get to customer service and then say, okay, we're good, like everything's fine. It's part of how we do business. So organizations that are successfully creating an inclusive workspace are probably doing a couple of things right. I say that they're ensuring that all employees understand that DEI is everyone's responsibility. They also understand that words matter, right, and potentially have policies and practices that articulate the importance of employees guarding their words and actions and being mindful of the things that they say and the behaviors that can create non-inclusivity. And with regards to action, these organizations understand that action speaks so much louder than words. It's bigger than just identifying challenges. Taking action and steps to overcome those challenges, I think, is what our employees are paying attention to.
So there's been a lot of emphasis on DEI since the Black Lives Matter movement and George Floyd, and everybody felt like there was, like, maybe this was the impetus for change. And then we also had the pandemic, and so we've been, which also brought exposure to disparities in health outcomes for African Americans and Hispanics in particular. But we've been so busy with the pandemic. How do leaders ensure that, like you said, that you continue focusing on DEI, given all the things that kind of came out in those things I just mentioned?
I think when we're thinking through what does it look like are you asking, like, what does inclusive leadership look like and focusing on that?
Mm-hmm.
Inclusive leadership, I would say, starts with ensuring that your employees can really, in fact, bring their whole selves to work. I was reading through an article. Hive Learning has listed both for 2019 and 2020 the top most influential D&I leaders. And if we're talking through what does it look like and ensuring that it is continuing to happen, some of these leaders are doing some fantastic things to ensure that there is, in fact, inclusive leadership taking place. One leader, Aldemese Rosemae Warner, she right now is the Senior Director of Global Employee Relations for Apple. For example, she's worked closely with her D&I team when she was back at Pandora to meet their aggressive diversity goals to increase the percentage of U.S. employees of color from 35% to 45% and aimed to achieve gender, racial, and ethnic promotion parity by the year 2020. So she attached numbers to thinking through what does inclusivity look like for us at this organization. And so I think when we're talking about what is it that leaders need to be doing, for sure, consistency, being consistent, being focused on what they want that outcome to look like.
Are there any examples in healthcare where leaders are doing DEI really well?
I don't have a specific example of a person. I can speak for us at the hospital level. We have a playbook that we use that was created for us that helps us be able to, you know, sort of like look through, you know, scenarios like, hey, this is something that I want to be mindful of and how do I approach the situation? I think it's about being intentional. I think it's about giving leaders the tools to be successful in that environment. Specific examples, I don't think I have an exact example of a leader doing DEI well in a healthcare setting, but I can look it up and find out.
But it's great that you've kind of emphasized what your organization is doing, and maybe it's not really a matter of pointing at a specific leader. I guess I just asked because, you know, sometimes people are like, well, who can I read or what person can I look to? But you've given a good answer. Thank you. Next question may seem like a bit of an overlap of what we've just talked about, but how can administrators consciously shift and change their narrative to improve patient outcomes?
Yeah, paradigms are changed intentionally. When we're talking about consciously shifting and changing our narratives, it's about a paradigm, and it's about changing those paradigms intentionally. I think it's important for all of us to start with, I'm probably not doing this well, and not get to a place of like, no, well, I'm doing it kind of well, or I'm doing it somewhat well, but just get to just a baseline of assuming I'm probably not doing it well. And if we think it through from that perspective, I think it allows for us to focus on, why potentially a narrative is unjust. Where is it coming from? You know, and it's going to look differently for different people. Using inclusive language isn't really found in sort of a tips or tricks kit. I think it's about doing research in the field. And that's going to also look different for each practice and for each administrator, right? What that research looks like and what information is going to be important and applicable to that individual. I can give you a healthcare example for myself. I actually recently went to see my provider just for a regular checkup. And during our conversation, she shared with me a documentary that she had watched on OWN that focused specifically on Black women and their infertility challenges and how meaningful that information was for her as a provider. And so we had a conversation about it. I have since watched the documentary that she was referring to. But what I can tell you that I thought created a closer bond with me and my provider is that she was intentional about being engaged with content that applied to her patients. It was deliberate. It was important for her to seek out data and seek out information that was relevant to the people she's a practitioner for. And so I think for other administrators, it's going to be about doing sort of the same thing, independently trying to figure out and find information that's relevant to the work that they do and to the people and employees that they serve.
Is inclusion a learned behavior?
Yes, I'd say so. I think inclusion is a habit, like any other habit. Habits involve specific behaviors. Inclusive behaviors range from specific ways team members interact during meetings, whether interrupting others is discouraged, how note-taking or other housekeeping tasks are assigned, whether all ideas are welcomed and appreciated, and more generally, just sort of like what kinds of jokes are okay and not okay to tell, how are high and low status tasks assigned and why. I'll give you a really brief example. We had I had a leader share with me an incident that had happened that she commended an employee for. Basically, they had a new employee come in. The new employee was gossiping about, you know, someone from another, you know, sister department or team. And, you know, the employee that they were talking to was overheard by saying, hey, I appreciate that might have been part of the culture of the team you were from. But we don't practice gossiping here. And so if you're having a challenge with that individual, you know, what we do here on our team is we approach that person directly and work through it one-on-one. And I think, you know, if we're using that as a parallel to creating inclusion, it's kind of the same thing, right? It's about creating an environment where staff understand what's accepted and what's not accepted. For employees to develop new habits, they need to learn explicitly and specifically what the new habits should be. So for example, does your organization have guidelines for inclusive team meetings? Do leaders get training in how to lead inclusive teams? Employees need guidance on what specifically inclusion means in your organization and within your team. It's going to be thinking through the policies that are practices and sort of what is the undertone of even the subculture, right? Because an organization can create policies and practices, but the subculture is going to be, you know, based on what the leader tolerates and allows to take place within their team. And so I think setting that bar is going to be really important for that leader to do to create that type of behavior for themselves and their team.
I think you made a good point that the leader kind of sets the bar, and all the example you gave and the advice you've given is great. In terms of leaders, what kinds of hard intentional questions should leaders ask others, and how do leaders ensure they don't alienate their teams on the path towards DEI?
Yeah. When you say what kinds of hard intentional questions leaders should ask others, I just want clarity on what you're trying to ascertain with that question. What do you mean?
Well, maybe it's questions they should ask themselves, and maybe it's questions they should ask others rather than just asking others. If they look at their environment and they, you know, maybe they want to increase the amount of diversity and make sure that everyone who may be a minority feels like they are part of the team fully, then what should they be looking mm-hmm. at, and what questions should they ask of their teams? Because sometimes if the leader comes in and says, oh, you know, we're going to hire X number of people, and then the team might be like, okay, where is this coming from? So does that mm-hmm. make sense?
I think so, and that's why I wanted to clarify, because it's a fine line, right? I think that, so on the one hand, I don't think that leaders should be asking hard and intentional questions of others, more specifically members of their team, mm-hmm. because the journey of DEI is a personal one, and in many instances, it's an independent learning assignment, and I think that sometimes leaders can make the mistake of, you know, asking, you know, minority members of their team for direction, et cetera. And I just think that that's a rabbit hole that perhaps should be avoided. Leaders can ask themselves the question, is the outcome of what I'm doing going to create greater, wider disparities or reduce them? I think it's super important for leaders to read, research, read widely. It's not just about the interpersonal relationships that they've created potentially within the workspace. It's going to be about creating those outcomes of their work. So that's why I was asking, you know, to be sure that we're not alienating, you know, members of the team. Even for myself in this podcast, I can generally give, you know, broad answers, but I think it's going to be really important for folks to think through this as sort of an independent learning assignment, an independent learning journey. And that's going to look differently for every individual, and it's going to be based on how focused they want to be in creating that kind of environment. We want to be careful of asking folks on, you know, asking members of your team specifically to speak on behalf of the greater, the larger group, or the group at large, sorry.
And that's a good point, and I think in your presentation, you did that where you gave that example of the person being hired and kind of the ideas that people formed in their head. And then you said, well, what if this twice divorced person was a woman versus it being a man, and the different and how that impacted the way people thought about it. And I'm sure that if people sitting side by side had a discussion, they might have had different interpretations. So I think you've made a very valid point about how it's a personal one and it's different for different people. In your presentation, you said if you want an inclusive workplace, you have to put it there. How do leaders put it there?
Yeah, just do it, literally. Ironically, the slogan campaign tied to the Nike brand in 1998 just do it. It was actually about inclusion. It was about making athleticism accessible to not only professional athletes, but more specifically for the people that typically are not considered in that space. They wanted to show everyday people from all types of demographics as athletes and deserving of wearing great athletic wear. Leaders have a lot more influence in creating inclusion than they may be aware of. It's about, like I said, being intentional and creating the inclusivity that they want to see by deciding it needs to be there. So an organization can put all kinds of policies in place, right? But in order for those policies to, in fact, be effective, leaders, A, need to have buy-in, and B, they need to be upholding that. And so I think that there's room for leaders to move forward with creating inclusion, even when there isn't, in fact, policies driving that initiative. I think it's about a leader looking at the landscape of their team or department that they're responsible for, or perhaps in this case, their practice, and being able to say, all right, what would an inclusive environment look like? Literally grab a pencil and pad and just kind of draw it out. You know, what do you imagine this sort of brave new world to look like? And as you sort of brainstorm and put that on the pad, start thinking through, okay, what are the blind spots I need to think through? What is the research that supports what I'm trying to do? What are other organizations doing that look similar to this environment that I want to create? And just kind of moving forward from there, like, okay, and if I do create this, and once this is created, what is it that I want to attach this to? What are the practices of the team that I want to set an expectation for? So yeah, if you want an inclusive workplace, you have to put it there. You have to architect it. You have to blueprint it. You have to think through what in fact building this environment looks like. Much like the article talked about with kindness, you know, when you think through family planning and creating a family and, you know, what that dynamic looks like, it's going to be intentional, right? There are certain things that as a family we do to create kindness. Maybe, you know, family dinners are a priority, and it's sort of like a household rule that we sit to the table and have dinner together, you know, 1 hour every day. That might be a family rule. Similarly, if we're creating inclusion, you know, we create policies that say, you know, we want to hear from everybody. We're going to seek out information and ideas from people that don't look like me, from people that don't think like me. And being intentional about how we were able to navigate that kind of situation, or how we navigate various situations with the inclusive help of others who might see that situation differently than you do.
All great points. How can leaders make inclusivity measurable?
Yeah, that's a big, tough question that a lot of leaders struggle through. So if you are a leader out there listening to us and you're like, man, I don't know how to make this measurable, you're not alone. Creating inclusive metrics is tough, but doesn't have to be. Inclusivity is measured by what administrators define to be a success. And that's going to look differently for everyone. But once you outline what a successful inclusive environment looks like, you want to include those behaviors as part of how you measure performance. So, you know, for us at Northside, we have service standards. Part of those service standards, while those service standards, I would say, are very broad in terms of behavior expectations, leaders have attached inclusive metrics to that. So commitment to coworkers is one of our service standards. A way in which those can be measured with inclusivity is, are you committed to all coworkers, or just coworkers that you see higher than you or greater than you, but then you disrespect the peers around you? And so there's measurables for that. And, you know, we have a performance rating scale, and leaders are able to have conversations with their team around what this service standard in fact looks like and how it applies not only just broadly to how we treat others, but how we're intentionally inclusive in treating others. So I think it's about attaching behavioral metrics to how you manage performance.
And my last question is, what are some key takeaways you would like administrators and their teams to remember?
Yeah, I think if we go back to some of the things I talked about in my lectures, three things. The first one has five components, which is remember the 5-leader guidelines. That's modeling the values, which is going to be about if a value for me is inclusion, then that's going to be something that I have to model. It's going to have to be something I do consistently. Otherwise, I'll get to that when I talk about consistent, but it's going to be important for folks to take me seriously to be consistent with modeling the value. Then we want to communicate and integrate. I want to be having conversations on a regular basis with people on my team, reinforcing inclusive activity, reinforcing, folks partnering together, holding accountable when I see inclusive behavior or non-inclusive behavior taking place, that I'm addressing it. Tough to do if I'm not talking about it or modeling those values. And then building an open culture, right? Like I was talking about, architecting the inclusive environment you want is going to be about making yourself available for folks to ask questions of you, to ask you questions, hard, intentional questions about what, in fact, that looks like. Creating an open culture for folks to be able to have safe dialogue with one another when non-inclusive behavior takes place. And then following up and reinforcing, ensuring that, you are measuring it, that you are having those conversations from behavioral performance standard. So the first one is remembering those 5-leader guidelines. The second one is going to be about being consistent, which goes back to like modeling the values. Your team can tell when an initiative is just a flavor of the month, when it's just a hot topic for right now, and then we're going to go back to status quo in a few weeks. So it's going to be really important for a leader to be consistent in their behavior and in the values that they're saying is important to them. And then lastly, my message was about inclusion as a behavior, right? It's a verb. You must consistently take action on it in order for it to have any effect. And so I think it's going to be thinking through inclusion the same way we think through kindness, thinking through inclusion the same way we think through, I don't want to minimize it, but similar to how we're intentional about customer service. We understand that it's an important part of the delivery platform of what we're executing in terms of our work. And so I think inclusion is right up there with that. It's very similar to how we provide services to our patients, but also more importantly, how we interact with each other. I think if we're focused on how we create that environment and working together with each other, then that service delivery is going to come out naturally.
Those are all great points, and thank you for a wonderful conversation with a lot of food for thought for administrators. I really appreciate your time today, Keisha Marie.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to SROA Soundboard. We hope you will join us again. For more information, visit www.sroa.org.